Jack Stein and Spike O'Neill, Mr. Rope Rescue himself. Isn't that right, Spike?
You know, I have actually saved two people's lives in my life, but never using a rope.
Okay. Did you have the Heimlich maneuver?
I actually performed CPR on somebody until paramedics arrived.
Wow.
For about 6 minutes.
Okay.
And I got a certificate from the American Heart Association for successful performance of CPR and life-saving maneuvers.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm pleased to be doing radio with a man who has saved the life of another human being.
Thank you.
This is very good news. Speaking of being pleased to be doing radio with somebody, Matt Markovich, a.k.a. Mark Matovich, joins us with the latest, the most dangerous man in Olympia, the man in which legislators get out of the way when he patrols the hallways. They cower in fear.
They step aside.
Right after
Markovich comes to town.
Yeah, after I talk with you, I'm going to be talking with the governor. I'm driving down there to see him.
Matt, what's going on with your voice? Is it because you've been yelling at Spike all morning?
Yeah, if you look in the cameras here, I'm drinking Spike's elixir to fix my voice.
Because we work the guy around the clock, and that's between shuttles down to Olympia. This guy ought to have a bat copter. If anybody in the Cairo newsroom deserves access to the Cairo News bat chopper, it's Matt Markovich.
Yeah. So wait, Matt, you got a little something, or is that just?
Yeah, I got this throat coat. This is a courtesy of Spike throat coat and some honey.
Yep,
it actually kind of works.
It's a patented. Wow. It's a trademarked brand name, Stein.
Well, but Matt, I feel because I have such a fondness for you and I care for you so very much that when I hear your voice, it physically pains me because I worry about your well-being.
I feel better than I sound right now.
Okay, good. All right, fine. So what is this about? I hear about infighting and people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that Aaron played that because now the cracks are kind of forming in the Democratic Party down there. Obviously, the Democrats are in control of everything, the governorship, the House, the Senate. And now we're starting to hear some friction between the Democrats about, well, he said that, and they're basically accusing him of lying. You just heard that the lead Democrat in the Senate, Annie Billig, basically said the governor the other day was lying about housing, and he was kind of misinformed. And guess what? Just the other day, we had a first-term Democratic representative, Julia Reed, said several times during a town hall meeting that the Democrats who are trying to push a pursuit bill that we've been talking about have been lying to the public.
So Democrats are leading this rollback. I think it's really unconscionable. And I think it's unconscionable because, frankly, I think people are being lied to. They are being fed misinformation.
So they're being used the lie word, and they're not accusing Republicans of lying, although she does go on and say that. But she's saying that fellow Democrats are lying to the public. So someone's going to get called up, like I said earlier, to the principal's office, which is the Speaker of the House.
Oh, yeah.
Close the door behind you. Yes. Have a seat.
And say, ma'am, we kind of just don't do that out in public right now. We don't want to show any kind of cracks in the rock. And that's what's kind of happening, especially with the pursuit bill, which is what I wanted to talk to you guys about.
So are there lies about what is going on within the pursuit bill? Are there machinations, schemes going on?
Well, the perception is that they all agree that the facts about pursuits and whether or not there's not having them is actually saving lives, or it's actually not having them is leading to higher crime rates because the police can't pursue anything. Those are facts that are in dispute, and so it's a kind of a gray area. So when you have facts that are in dispute, is it really lying because they don't have the right facts? So that's kind of what they're saying, is that the lying is taking place by this misinformation campaign about whether the pursuing criminals is actually saving lives because there's going to be fewer accidents. So that's what the lying is about, and it's still a gray area. But I wanted to send to you because one of the big things that's come up is the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs sent a letter to the members of the House because they're considering the Senate bill that's now in front of them. They had a chance to vote on a pursuit bill. They punted, didn't even have a vote on the floor about it. Now they're going to get a chance to do it again. And so the sheriffs and police chiefs sent this letter of 35 different felonies that right now, under the bill that's now before the House, they could not chase somebody. And I said it to you guys, and I thought I wanted to see what you got to take about this. Now, what these 35 crimes, these felonies, and the key part is that they're saying are categorically ineligible for a pursuit, no matter the circumstances.
Yeah, so, Matt, can I give your voice a bit of a break? I'll read a couple of these for you.
Is it painful? Is it not?
It's actually sexy. It is. So, call 1-800-OLYMPIA now. Find out what your legislator's
been
up to.
Sorry, okay.
No, it's totally fine. So pursuant to SB 5352, as amended by the Senate, many felony offenses remain categorically ineligible for a vehicular pursuit, no matter the circumstances, including when a person who is involved in a vehicular collision resulting in the death of another person and flees the scene. He goes on to say, a person who enters or remains unlawfully in a dwelling other than a vehicle with the intent to commit a crime against a person or property therein, a person who causes physical injury to another person.
Just stop on that very first one. Think about that first one. A person who's involved in a collision resulting in the death and then flees the scene.
Yeah, that's
they're
a
saying you can't chase that person.
Isn't that vehicular manslaughter?
It can be.
I mean, that's
a hit and run. It's a hit and run, and it elevates because it caused the death.
Right. Not just a property crime of hit and run.
Right.
Got it.
I found that really surprising.
Yeah, these are Class B felonies, and the one that I find to be very surprising is a person enters or remains unlawfully in a dwelling other than a vehicle with the intent to commit a crime against a person or property therein. Residential burglary. So you can't pursue that individual. You just got to go, well, you know, we knew that you were in there. We knew that your intent was to commit a crime, but you go ahead and you'll go on your merry way.
Well, right? The one that stuck out to me is an adult who assaults a child under the age of 13 by means of a weapon likely to produce bodily harm.
People who violate domestic violence protection orders, sexual assault protection orders, stalking protection orders, vulnerable adult protection orders, none of these can be pursued.
According to the police chiefs and the sheriffs here.
A person who steals a firearm or is in possession of a stolen firearm.
And flees.
Wow. I mean, I laugh because it's absurd, right? I laugh because it's sad. And the idea that you could not pursue people who are committing Class C felonies or... here's another one. A person who assaults a law enforcement officer with a projectile stun gun. Assault 3 of a peace officer with a stun gun. It's a Class C felony. You cannot pursue that person. A person who assaults a law enforcement officer, period.
Yeah.
Well, even though if you go down, there's another list down there, the next page, the last one, buying or selling a child.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, this is going on between Inslee and, who is this between again?
Well, this is the pursuit bill. What I played was the sound of a Democratic representative who's basically blaming her fellow Democrats who are pushing for changes, and I should say reform, that's the key word here, reform of the police pursuit bill, saying that they're, you know, accusing them of lying and giving misinformation. There's the clear division. All the Republicans are going to vote for it. They want to see tighter restrictions. Right. I mean, they want to be able to have the police chase more people than they could right now. So all the Republicans are going to vote for it, but they're the minority. So it leaves up to, you know, 14, 15 Democrats that need to switch over and join the Republicans, probably 20 to be be able to pass it, to switch over to the Republicans. And the Democrats, you know, the original bill was 20 Democrats and 20 Republicans signed onto it. So it's got bipartisan support.
Right.
But there are a lot of Democrats, the leadership primarily, that say, hey, we don't need to change this. And it's a lot of infighting right now. So what's going to happen? Here's what happened yesterday on this. Normally, when it goes from one house to the other, there's a public hearing so we can all comment on it. Well, yesterday, the leadership in the House decided not to hold a public hearing. They're not going to let the public comment on any changes or all these things I just talked about. They're going to move it to an executive committee on Tuesday, and then they will decide whether to send it to the House floor and vote on it. But then the leadership has to decide whether to bring it to the floor. Last time this came, they didn't do it. Now they have a second shot at it, and we'll see if they're going to do it.
I just find it so interesting that they decided not to listen to I don't know how many dozens of people come and yell at them and tell them to pass it. Do you know what I mean?
Matt reported that the public hearing section on this pursuit bill was capped at a couple hours.
Yeah.
Everyone had just a few minutes to say things.
They had hundreds of people
wanted to
say something.
Meanwhile, requiring a license and permit for a paddleboard, that had all the time you need to come in and make all the comments you want. No limit whatsoever on whether or not you need to have the permit with you in a waterproof pouch as you paddleboard on Lake Union.
Or the state dinosaur.
Which state cactus we're going to talk about.
Because apparently we're all in third grade and we need to know what the state dinosaur is.
These are the moments I am embarrassed by my own party.
I truly hear you. I'm embarrassed for you, Spike, to be honest with you.
There's plenty to go around. Everybody, please.
Matt, what's going on with the squabbling right now between Inslee and the head of the Senate? Chris Martin sent me this. He said,
"Well, we talked about that. That was at the top of the news there, where Inslee, when he came out and did a photo op 2 days ago at a camp out here, where they've just been cleaning up. It's been a camp that's underneath the First South Bridge that's been there for years." It was rated the number one hazardous camp by the city of Seattle 2 years ago. It's a bad camp. A lot of it's on state property. So he shows up while they're cleaning up. And then the Senate had just basically not given him enough money to do housing, which is what he wants to do. And he's been talking about this $4 billion public vote for housing. So he basically did a stump speech out there for his housing plan. And he criticized the Senate. Well, then the Senate, basically the Senate leader, give me a second here if I can pull this up. The Senate leader, Annie Billig, basically called the governor a liar, saying this is not what the way it is.
I was really disappointed. A number of the statements you made just were not true. In fact, this somehow being less than previous capital budgets is just outright false.
So there you go. That's the lead Democrat in the Senate taking on the lead. The number one Democrat in the entire state, the governor.
Yes, the head of his party.
Out in the open. And they're very far apart on the budget. It's budget week. So the real bickering is going to start right now. And I'll bring it to you 24/7. How about that?
Nice.
Well, thank you, Matt. I appreciate that. And I do hope that your voice recovers, my friend, because you sound good.
You know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Is
it fingernails on the chalkboard?
It's more of a smoky Sam Elliott kind of thing.
It's more like the beef.
It's what's for dinner.
It's almost what's her name from the Goonies. Remember the mean lady from the Goonies?
The Fratelli, Mother Fratelli. I love it.
I'm just giving you a hard time, man.
No. I didn't know whether. Do you still want to talk about guns?
Yeah, let's talk about guns, man. Let's go into it.
I'm going to go all the way here. So there's a bill also being proposed. I'm going to pull up my notes here real quick. There's a bill that's being proposed that talks about gun, not sorry, gun reform, but restoration. So when you get your guns taken away, when should you get them back by the officers?
Okay.
So there's two parts to this bill. It basically says that the victim who was victimized by a gun violence, and I think the best thing to do, if I can be fast enough on all this here,
throat coat
affects my brain somehow. You know, maybe
that's the tequila I put in there.
Oh, okay,
you'll be fine. Okay. Go with it.
All right, I don't. Yeah, if I play this, it'll maybe bring people down. But it basically says this. If your police come and take your guns because you were involved in domestic violence or something like that, when they're restored, the victim has a say-so on when and if they should be restored. The judge can bring that into a factor.
The decision-making?
Yeah, but they're adding a bunch of other crimes that even if you're just charged and with these crimes like domestic violence, cyber-stalking, unlawful carrying firearm, and get this, if you're just charged with animal cruelty in the second degree, or you're being charged with a DUI, someone can request to have your guns taken out.
Wow.
With a DUI, which has nothing to do with guns, but you can now ask a judge to have the guns removed from someone's house if they've been charged with a DUI. And I'm just going to place one thing. This is Amy Friedman, King County prosecutor. She's the deputy prosecutor in the traffic unit who deals with a lot of DUIs.
Because of the cases that I see every day, I know that a firearm prohibitor is necessary with a person who has multiple impaired driving offenses. Study after study has shown, and that is a correlation between alcohol abuse and future gun violence, including suicide.
And so all the gun advocates are going to say another reason, whether it's good or not, to take away my guns. I'm not being convicted of a DUI. I've just been charged with animal cruelty, DUI. That's the level. Domestic violence, I think people would assume that would be okay.
Right.
But animal cruelty and DUI.
She was speaking to habitual DUIs.
Yeah.
Correct. And I could see where that would be a worthwhile factor to consider.
Well, it's another case, the case you have to make in front of the judge.
Right, right. Much like a victim of domestic violence having a chance to speak to the judge, saying, Judge, he's still there, he's still stalking, he's still emailing, he's persistent, that would be a factor worth considering. Mm. Not the determining factor, but just one more factor a judge gets to consider.
I'd be totally fine with that. Multiple DUIs, I have no issue. And you know me, Spike, I'm Mr. Two-Way over here.
You are.
If you have multiple DUIs, I have no – let's DUIs that you have been charged with and are – you know, you've got one, two, and then you're on your third one. I'm more than fine with the state coming in and taking away your guns. Because if you look at the stats – I just pulled these up really quick. People who get DUIs significantly much more likely to harm themselves. So
right, and the suicide was the first factor she cited. You're exactly right, Jack.
So,
but the argument I'm playing devil's advocate here, obviously, with the gun rights people, it's a death by a thousand cuts. You know, slowly and slowly. Yeah. Even today, they had the hearing today for the assault weapons ban in the I believe it was in the House today. You know, that's a big thing. We've tried it seven times in the state. It hasn't happened. So the gun rights people are basically saying, you know, here we're talking about DUIs and taking my gun away, which is a right.
And if you don't,
and I'm not even convicted.
No, but if you don't think death by a thousand cuts works, look at how the far right, the evangelical Christians have by a thousand cuts gone after reproductive laws. And now we've all the way to the Supreme Court. So little by little by little, that chipping away, that slippery slope argument. Yeah, there's merit to it. So I'd be worried if I were gun owners, if I was a 2A enthusiast, and I am. You'd be worried about little tiny thousand cuts.
Yeah, and I can understand now, you know, if you're a guns rights advocate, I can understand that at this point, any encroachment feels like, it doesn't feel like a little cut. You know what I mean? It feels arterial, you know, scarring going on, and you just don't want to deal with it anymore. Matt Markovich, thank you so much for coming in. Hopefully your evil twin, Mark Matovich, feeling a little bit better next
guy's
time.
On vacation this week.
Yeah,
what nerve.
I'll go get him. Yeah, I'm sure his throat's fine.
He's in the San Juans. he's paddleboarding with his permit.
All right. When we get back, we're going to be talking about how American IQ scores are down, and also, once again, book ban attempts are increasing across the country. We'll talk about both of those when we get back right after this. So, Americans' IQ scores are getting lower in some areas and higher in one. So, ability scores of verbal reasoning, logic, vocabulary, matrix reasoning, that's visual problem solving and analogies, and letter and number series, computational mathematical, dropped in the last, it looks like the last about 7 years, from 2011 to 2018. All those went down, but scores of a 3D rotation or spatial reasoning generally increased. Now, Spike, you illuminated to us during the pre-show meeting that spatial reasoning means that someone can now accurately predict the difference between 6 feet and 5 feet.
They know exactly when someone is within 6 feet. You're not 6 feet. Oh, let me muffle that through a mask.
Right. So
we got really good at that in the last 3 years.
Right. So one of the authors was talking about this. She says, I don't want people to think that Americans are getting less intelligent. We're just getting more variable in our intelligence rates. I think this is a nice way of saying that Americans are, in fact, getting stupider.
And you're all special. It's okay. But you're all wonderful little creatures in your own little way.
I spend a lot of time on Twitter, as you know. I spend a tremendous amount of time on the internet. Some people say that it's an unhealthy amount, and
well,
I can
tell
you.
They did say that's one of the factors that led to lower scores. Sorry.
I can tell you that the amount of stupid people out there, I'm going to try to be as kind as I can, but people who are lacking in basic intelligence skills, basic emotional intelligence skills, basic methods of argumentation. The vast majority of the people that I interact with on the internet have no idea how to speak to another human being. They have no idea how to do it. They have no idea how to interact. They have no idea how to conduct themselves in a civil society. And not only that, their argumentation is bad. It's not even bad. It's awful. It's almost non-existent. And so in my mind, Spike, you know, they've got a lot of things here saying what has contributed to the decline of intelligence in human beings. I think what it largely has to do with is that because there is so much information at our fingertips, literally the entire universe is contained in a 3x5 little box that we carry around in our hands with us at all times, we no longer have to exercise our more critical, the aspects of our brain that deal with critical thinking or even pattern recognition, our temporal lobes trying to seek out patterns. Now we just have all this information available to us. We can tune into it. And so we don't need to retain it. We don't need to encode it. And we don't need to apply it because our little God box that we have that we carry around, thanks, Apple for ruining my brain, does it all for us. And so that's why I think people are getting stupider.
Well, the study pointed to four major areas. Poor nutrition. And that's we've spoken before about the value of children's meals at school.
Okay,
kids getting
true.
To learn. That's a fundamental element of building the building blocks that make a brain able to attain and process information. Worsening health overall, they say, is one of the factors. Media exposure is listed as a factor. You're right. Our attention spans being shortened by the day.
Yep.
But changes to education is the fourth factor they put in. And I point to an educational system that stopped teaching kids how to think, how to problem solve and how to find answers, and taught them how to get higher test scores by remembering things.
Yeah.
When we incentivized teachers to, and we based everything we did upon test scores, we had teachers start teaching to tests and memorization and not teaching kids how to be critical thinkers.
Yeah, I remember one time I went to go give a friend of mine said, I have a friend who's a fifth grade teacher and her kids are learning sign language. Would you mind and go and kind of giving them a little talk about sign language? Because both of my parents are deaf. And so I go, yeah, sure, I'll go teach these kids about sign language. And when I walk into the classroom, it's during their first recess. Got to be 9 something in the morning. And I look up at the board and there are vocab terms that are listed. And up above it, it says, this will be on the STAR test. The standardized testing, right? And so these kids weren't learning these vocab words to enrich their vocabulary. They were learning these words because this is what the federal government wanted them to learn.
Right.
And I'm looking at this and I think, does a fifth grader need to know what a magnum opus is? Are they going to be using that in their general vocabulary? I'm not so sure. But does the federal government think that they need to know that? Yes, absolutely. Instead of them learning the magic of language, right, and the magic of what it means to have an advanced vocabulary, they go, a magnum opus, it's a masterpiece of music, and then they turn into little robots. They turn into, from The Wall, do you know what I mean? We don't need no,
no I totally,
education.
I totally get it.
They turn into little robots. And so when I go in there, I start teaching these kids about sign language, and they light up because we're not reading from a book. It is a visual medium, and I'm showing them different signs and we're doing little exercises together. The teacher comes to me during their lunch break and she says, hey, would you mind hanging out for like another 2 hours? And like, cause these kids are really excited about it. So I go, okay, lady, I'll do your job for you. And so we hung out and we went over the vocab terms and sign language and they were so into it.
Look at you.
And it was such a wonderful day. Point being, is that I think what's happened is that now that we have these testing, as exactly as you pointed out, Spike, now that we have these testing regimens, are the teachers really teaching what they want to teach, or are they teaching, you know, this is what the federal government wants, this is what the state wants you to learn, or whatever it is?
Well,
are they not excited about it?
No, and they don't get paid unless those test scores are met. I mean, we've incentivized teachers to stop teaching kids how to think.
Yeah.
It's just, it's brutal. Can you imagine how much, how wonderful it would be if kids could actually listen to a magnum opus instead of just defining it and using classical music to get kids to think and listen to see how things interact and how important music is. And it's a proven fact. Kids who learn music do better at math. Did I drop you off the map? Stunned? He responded in sign language, folks. It was wonderful.
You had a vocal trajectory, and yeah. I was just anticipating your next word.
Oh, it said pause for applause here in my script. So
instead of pause. There, is that what you want?
Thank you, Andrew.
There you go. All right. And so next up, though, also I think what is contributing to the decline in intelligence that's happening amongst children are the book bans that are going on. Bans have hit a record high in 2022. That's what many library organizations are saying. We've heard this, you know, the same story over and over and over again. The disturbing thing, though, to me, Spike, is that this seems to be a bipartisan attempt to remove literature from libraries. So, for instance, in San Francisco, you have school libraries, which are attempting to remove books like Huckleberry Finn or A Raisin in the Sun or any of these kind, or even Native Son books of that nature, because they find them to be offensive. And then at the same time, you have schools in Florida that are attempting to do the same thing because they find them to be offensive for different reasons. So it's really interesting to me the kind of similarities that we see between the far left and the far right when it comes to the kind of literature that they don't want kids to see. There's some overlap there. It's like a Venn diagram. Do you know what I mean?
They
don't want kids to read To Kill a Mockingbird, but for different reasons.
it seems to me, and I don't know, because my kids are through the public school process. My youngest has moved on to college. So luckily, I mean, I feel very lucky for my older daughter that she lived pre-social media. My younger daughter lived pre-parents getting books out of schools. I think this is fired up parents being active in their local schools, which is a good thing. But through paranoia, saying my kid doesn't need to read about The Killing Mockingbird, that's going to make people feel bad. And sometimes kids need to feel bad. I got bad news for parents.
Make your kids feel bad.
Sometimes, a little bit.
All right, we'll take a really quick break. When we get back, find out why I'm not excited about grizzly bears returning to the Cascades. I've got many thoughts about this, and we'll be right back right after this. Spike, there are plans to bring grizzly bears back to the North Cascades, and these plans are moving forward. I am all for conservation. I love animals. As you know, Spike, I take care of my neighbors. My neighbor is a drug addict, and he has a cat, and I take care of his cat for him because I am a true animal lover. I'm a friend to our feathered and fur-lined friends. You like that alliteration right there, Spike?
That was really well played.
Plus radio. Yes,
seriously.
Good job, me. So, but what I don't want, though, Spike, is I don't necessarily want the bears back. And here's why. I'm fine with them being on a reserve, you know, being in like a several hundred acre reserve. But if you go back and you read about the exploration of this great country, you're talking Lewis and Clark, all those other kinds of expedition. Bears were a nuisance. They were a menace. They're literally land sharks. They were literally hunting these guys down and trying to kill these people. So when you tell me you're going to bring bears back, I know that everybody likes to think like, oh, it's going to be so cute and cuddly, and they're going to try to find honey and hang out with their, you know, little piglet friend. These are like death machines. These are huge 800-pound death machines that want to eat your animals and your children and you, and they won't think twice about doing it. And so when I read about them, you know, I'm of two minds about this. I don't want animals to go extinct. I want them to be able to thrive and be the wonderful, beautiful creatures that they are. And at the same time, I don't want to have to walk around having to worry about getting mauled by a bear like we're in 1840. Those are my thoughts.
Well, I'm thinking, why is this a topic? Are the trails too crowded? Is this the solution they're after? You know, grizzlies are becoming near extinct in the Cascade region, and I understand that that's something nobody wants. but we are also a city that's looking to expand its living spaces. And there's every time you drive further out into the city, there's a city that wasn't there 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's one thing when a deer comes in and snoops around your yard, or a brown bear or even a black bear goes through your garbage, and it happens constantly these days. You constantly see stories of bears, coming into neighborhoods. And now you're going to bring grizzlies into this area. And when you said 800 pounds, that's the cub the mother is protecting. Grizzlies weigh about a ton of claw and tooth. And grizzlies come out twice a year, when they're stocking up food for the winter or when they wake up hungry in the spring.
Right.
I do not see. I'm with you. I'd like to see them in the further reaches of the Northern Cascades, Canadian border areas. But it's dangerous to do this. You know, what's next? Dinosaurs?
So the proposal,
bring it all back.
The proposal would introduce 3 to 7 bears over 5 to 10 years, with the objective of reaching a population of 25. Once that goal is achieved, more bears could be released as the agency seek to create a population of 200 grizzlies within 60 to 100 years. I feel like those are rookie numbers. If you're really going to, let's take the opposite side of this argument.
Okay.
If you really want to save the grizzlies, give us 1,000 today. Just go out, get us a couple thousand of them. We'll release
bring them all.
Yeah, bring them all. We'll do a Dumbo drop. You remember Dumbo
yes,
drop?
Yes, I do.
We'll fly them over with some, C-130s, and we'll parachute them out of the back. When they wake up, they can take off their little bear parachutes, and then we'll have 1,000 grizzly bears. Does that sound like a good idea? Everyone says no. Then why is it okay to do 3 to 7 every year for the next so many years? This is what I'm saying, is that I think that if you really want to save the grizzlies, you have to have a reserve for them. Let's carve out a couple hundred miles for them, and let's call it a day. That's their home, the grizzly reserve. And if some people sneak in there, that's on them.
Shame on you.
That's on you. If you want to go get mauled to death by a grizzly bear, that's on you. It's not on me. It's not on Spike. It's not on the state. That's your decision. You hop the fence. Buy the ticket, take the ride, right?
It's like the folks who want to go pose next to a buffalo in Yellowstone.
Yes.
Okay, this right. ought to be fun video.
Right.
I mean, really,
yeah.
These are wild animals. This is not, come on. Yeah, I don't see the sense of repopulation. I know there are endangered species that we need to protect, but by bringing them back in areas that will become only more populated in the next 10, 20 years, I don't see the wisdom of this. 10 years from now, we've got a grizzly problem in the Cascade region.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly my point. When we get back, breaking news, allergy season, which Jack Stein is certainly suffering from today, is now 3 weeks longer because of longer summers. And also, there's an equity press release from King County that I think is madness, but Spike loves every word of it.
Every word.
And what's going on with Donald Trump? I keep getting told that he's going to get arrested. Well, the DA has something to say about that when we get back right after this.